Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. Hey, guys, welcome back to Boston Confidential. First off, I want to wish everybody a happy Easter. I'm recording this the Saturday just before Easter, and I wanted to wish everybody a terrific Easter. We need to re-examine that message, but I believe the weather's going to be pretty good, guys. Get outside if you can and celebrate. It's going to be about 60 degrees. That could go either way in Boston. You could have short sleeves or a winter parka on. Who really knows? If the sun is out, all will be well. But have a great Easter. All right, guys, just some housekeeping stuff. We had a big response to our episode on Keith Luke last week. It was actually a replay. And for whatever reason, his story touches a lot of people. Keith Luke was a schizophrenic. I guess he was best described as being a racist schizophrenic. But he had committed just some horrible carnage in Brockton and left a lot of damage in his wake. He shot a homeless guy after leaving a home where he raped a woman. And Keith Luke thought he killed her, but this woman was tough as nails and she survived. He did kill her roommate, so it was a double homicide. I guess it was supposed to be a triple homicide. But the guy was schizophrenic. Mixed that with some stupid racism, and you get Mr. Luke. Mr. Luke is not with us, so we're not paying for his lifelong stay in state prison. So if there's any upside to that story, maybe that's it. So this week, guys, we're going to do an update on the Karen Reed case out of Canton, Massachusetts. Judge Canoni has ruled on two motions before her, basically to dismiss this case. One to disqualify the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office, and I believe one to dismiss outright. And that's not going to happen. She ruled against the defense in those motions, and the trial is slated for April 19th of this year. I don't believe that schedule will stay intact. The FBI, through the Department of Justice, has submitted that TUI information, and that was thousands of pages. That combined with the alarming fact that the prosecution has not completed discovery in this case leads me to believe that the case will be pushed back at least till summertime, maybe June or July at any rate, because how do you prepare a defense when you don't even have the information back from the Commonwealth? And I got to say, it seems to be intentional. And I believe if the defense was withholding something that the prosecution was entitled to, Judge Canoni would be a little more concerned. So guys, I am dismayed that the Commonwealth is going forward with this case. But I did predict that. If you remember in my previous podcast, I stated that I believe the Commonwealth has to go to trial because they can survive a not guilty on the Karen Reed case specifically. What they can't survive is the exposure of all this corruption, right? Just the stuff we know. And in the last hearing, they only gave the defense 10 minutes and the prosecution 10 minutes each to put forth their motion. And the defense had more to offer, but they were limited by time. So they went through a lot of stuff that you would think would get the judge's ire, right? And she never even asked Ms. Dallaly, you know, and this is going back 4 or 5 hearings at this point. Why doesn't she just ask in open court, does Investigator Proctor have a friendly relationship with the McCabes and Alberts? Like, I'm just waiting for her to say, what about it, ADA Lally? Does your main witness, your homicide investigator, know the people involved in this case? And the answer is yes. And we've learned that through the TUI submission. And the defense is going to run a train right through that. As prosecutors, the Commonwealth is ethically bound not to bring a case against a citizen where they have no likelihood of conviction. But they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And this is why I think the Massachusetts Attorney General should step in. They won't because they're political cowards. But the Attorney General should step in and say, this is just an egregious governmental conduct. You've already lied. The main witness in this case has already lied. How's that questioning going to go, guys? The prosecution's going to try to soften the blow on the Michael Proctor end of it by getting it out first. So during their presentation, during their opening, they'll say, yes, Michael Proctor lied about this specific thing, but nothing else. But then it's the defense's turn. And if I'm on a jury and you've already lied from Jump Street, you should have recused yourself from this case. And everything that flows after should be reasonable doubt. You're already a liar. You're already a liar. And don't forget, guys, also from that TUI information, you get text messages from Michael Proctor's sister to State Trooper Michael Proctor saying, I just ran into Julie Albert, and she wants to give you a gift after this is all over, right? And Michael Proctor at that time could have stated, no, that would be construed as a bribe. He could have said, no, I did nothing for anybody. I'm a straight shooter. He didn't. He said, give the gift to my wife. So basically saying, give the graft and corruption in this case to my wife, which will also benefit me, right? That's a bribe. So you have that right out of the gate. A, you're willing to take a bribe, and B, you've rigged this case. On this issue alone, the case should have been thrown out, and the judge should have had some courage and done the right thing here. You do have egregious governmental misconduct, and the defense was going to file that motion, but they could see that Judge Cannone, and at least I can too, that she is not going to dismiss this case. So strategically, the defense has kept that information, and I think it'll be a blockbuster when it comes to trial. But it's going to just contain more wild corruption, which was already proven by the FBI. That's the thing, guys. I don't understand how this goes forward. You have the FBI, what people think is the foremost law enforcement agency in the world, saying that John was not killed by getting hit by a car, one, and two, specifically, wasn't killed by Karen Reed's car. That's the prosecutor's whole case. Are they going to change it yet again? Because if you remember in this case, guys, the first prosecution theory was Karen hit John. I believe they originally thought by accident, by error, while making a 3-point turn. And again, they did no accident reconstruction because the strike would have been on the other side of the car, right? If he was doing a 3-point turn. So the prosecution the first time alters the prosecution theory saying, no, she backed up intentionally now because they upgraded the charges to murder. Backed up intentionally from something like 30 to 35 yards at like 24 miles an hour, 17 or 24 miles an hour in that range. and struck him intentionally and then left. But she strikes him on the road and he's found 12 feet onto the lawn. Ah, come on. And now the FBI says, no, the car did not strike John at all. So how do you deal with that as a prosecutor? Basically, the FBI is going to testify and they've taken away your murder weapon. Now what do you do? And so imagine you have an FBI analyst or agent on the stand and you say, well, if your determination is that the vehicle was not involved in this homicide, how did the taillights from Karen Reed's vehicle make it to the crime scene? I certainly don't know how that FBI agent would respond, but I believe all heads in the courtroom would turn to Michael Proctor, right? Because if the vehicle is found not to be involved in the homicide, somebody broke that taillight. And again, I know I'm like a broken record on the taillight thing, but at about 5 a.m. when Karen Reed is leaving John's condo, a townhouse, she is seen on videotape backing the vehicle out of the driveway garage area, and she slightly bumps John's SUV. And as she turns within the driveway, you can see that that taillight is mostly intact, largely intact there. So it was already supposed to be on the lawn, right? So how does the taillight get from the vehicle to the crime scene? Well, the state police had custody of the vehicle. The authorities had custody of that vehicle. And now the FBI is saying that taillight never struck John, yet it's in pieces. And this isn't just Barry McGuire saying this from Boston Confidential or Aidan Carney from Turtle Boy News saying it. This is the FBI. The people who investigated the accident have PhDs in this science. Is the prosecution going to say, no, okay, you're wrong. All of your PhD in training is absolutely wrong. It's not going to go over well with the jury. So before I get into the motions that were denied by Judge Cannoni in this case earlier this week, let's get into the witnesses that we know have lied. And again, the first one is Michael Proctor. Michael Proctor lied under oath about his relationship with the Alberts and the McCabes. The defense, during previous motions, has shown photos of Michael Proctor with Jen McCabe's kid. And the prosecution at that point, while directing their attention to that photograph of Proctor in his state police uniform and Jen McCabe's kid, Assistant District Attorney Lally, and there was another kid in the photo, stating that he went on to say that Proctor doesn't know the other child in the photograph. It was a complete lawyerly bullshit maneuver, and it's now going to bite them in the ass because Michael Proctor, at the federal grand jury into the corruption in this case, had to admit on the stand that he does have a close personal relationship with the Alberts and the McCabes. The defense is going to drive a bus through that alone, full stop. Just a few months after that, the district attorney himself, Mike Morrissey, goes on television. I don't know whoever advised him to do this. And he tried to bolster the witnesses in this case and again stated that Michael Proctor, the lead homicide investigator, had no relationship with the witnesses in this case, despite knowing that he did. Proctor eventually had to tell them, yeah, I'm friends with them, because there are photos. There's videos of Michael Proctor dancing at a wedding with the McCabes and Alberts. What more do you need to know? They're going to show that on TV. But again, I don't think the Commonwealth cares about losing a verdict. They care about this corruption. So if this goes to trial and they get a verdict of innocence, they don't really care. But if it gets dismissed because of all this corruption. Man, there's going to be a protest demanding change. There may be anyway, but I can't believe it, because think about it. Turtle Boy got to this point faster than I did, much faster. And we had talked about it during our interview. And I said, I can't really get to the state police breaking the taillight and transferring it to the crime scene and onto John's clothing. And Aiden responded, Barry, you still believe in institutions. I no longer do, because of the FBI TUI information. They may have been able to pull this off if it wasn't for the FBI. But the FBI, through that TUI information, has taken away your murder weapon, right? There's so much wrong with this case. Sometimes it's like as new things come up, you forget the old things. You forget that Michael Proctor did not attempt to track down the plow driver, Lucky Loughran, right? And the defense is going to say, you didn't attempt to track down the plow operator because you knew he wouldn't have seen anything, because you were trying to protect your friends. You're friends with these people, aren't you, Trooper Proctor? What would you do to help them? Because you should have recused yourself. You were obviously there for a reason. You were there to help them. You were going to accept a bribe from Julie Albert, right, according to this text message? How does this case go forward? It's beyond me. And these questions for Detective Proctor would go on and on. Detective Proctor, why did you separate the witnesses at the crime scene? Why were all these people interviewed within earshot of each other? It's because they were your friends. Isn't that true? So, Detective Proctor, if the gift that Julie Albert wanted to give you for fixing this case was cash, what would you have spent it on? How about that for a question? Detective Proctor, you heard the FBI say that John O'Keefe's injuries weren't consistent with a car accident, nor was he struck by Karen's vehicle. If that's the case, how did the taillight fragments get to the crime scene? What's his answer to that? He's a homicide investigator. He should be able to answer it, right? There's a million questions just like that that smarter minds than mine would certainly come up with, like Yannetti and Jackson. They're going to tear this apart. Every answer Proctor gives, it's going to end with, because they were your friends, right? And don't forget, there's always this line of question. You were never going to tell the Commonwealth. You were never going to admit to being friends with the Alberts and the McCabes. You were never going to admit that. The only reason, Detective Proctor, that you did in fact admit to it is that the federal government is investigating your corruption in this case, right? The next question would be, you are under investigation by your own Internal Affairs Division. Isn't that right, Detective Proctor? How do you win that case? How do you win that? How do you recover from that? All right, on to the next honoree, I guess. The next witness we know has already lied. And this one isn't as concrete as Detective Proctor. This is his boss, Sergeant Yuri Bukanik. And I think he works in tandem with Proctor. But he's also very close to this case. It has been reported that his younger brother, I believe it's Yuri Bukanik's younger brother, is friends with Canton police officer Kevin Albert. And I think Bukanik lives in the neighboring town of Stoughton. So he may have some issues there as well. And again, they're going to drive a truck right through that. All right, Sergeant Bukanik, that's a quick one. The next two I want to talk to you about came out recently from the last hearing in this case. And it was phone calls between Brian Albert and Brian Higgins. And again, the only reason we know of this is because of the TUI information. These two people, Brian Albert, who is the homeowner, who's also a Boston police officer, and Brian Higgins, who is their friend and an ATF agent. If you remember, I stated in previous podcasts, I believe the ATF agent was going into the Canton Police Department during the early morning hours so he could be on camera somewhere else. But the TUI information revealed actually a little bit more than that. He was in telephone contact with Brian Albert, and he tried on the stand to say that this was a butt dial, but they made him admit the fact that he had to open his phone with his fingerprint, press on the number, and make the call in the usual fashion. So the butt dial thing is kind of misleading. It's been bandied around this whole case because these witnesses have all been in contact with each other. This particular spate of phone calls between Higgins and Brian Albert occurred at just about 2:22 a.m. It was an 11-second phone call, I believe, at first, then a quick callback. And so they tried to say it was a butt dial, both of them. But I know that the ATF agent Higgins on the stand had to admit that that was a lie. They've already lied in this case. And don't forget, Brian Albert stated that he was asleep at that time. He wasn't asleep. He was talking to Higgins. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 lying witnesses the government is going to have to put before a jury. And the only reason they eventually told the truth is because if you lie to the federal grand jury, you go to prison. That's the only reason they told the truth whatsoever. Boston cop, ATF. I mean, come on. I do have a question about this case, though, guys. If any lawyers in the audience can inform me. On August 25th, 2023, Michael Morrissey released a video recorded media package and sent it out to all the news outlets. And it was an unprecedented thing to do. I guess the rationale from their point of view was witnesses were being harassed. This is when Turtle Boy was trying to interview people sometimes at, you know, sporting events and all this. So Michael Morrissey, in response, tries to shore this up in saying that none of these witnesses were involved in a conspiracy. He went on to say, again, that Michael Proctor had no close personal relationship with the Alberts and the McCabes. And that's since been disproven because he had to tell the federal grand jury that he did, in fact, know these people. So does that make Morrissey a witness in this case? You know what I mean? And honestly, I think Morrissey already knew. He knew that the state police homicide investigator Proctor was going to cookouts with witnesses in this case. I mean, it's a recipe for a mistrial, and that was part of the defense strategy when they filed the motion to dismiss this case just recently. It was denied, but they went into the fact that Morrissey was lying about the relationship between Proctor and the McCabes. So what else is he lying about? Is he now a witness? And don't forget, the federal corruption probe is focusing on the Mass State Police and Michael Morrissey's office. Now, I've heard it bandied about, and I was also looking for a quote, if anybody can send me one. I was looking for it all day today. But the quote I'm looking for is from Josh Levy, the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts. And it's reported that he has said he will not let Karen Reed go to trial. But the way I've picked it up is somebody else said that. He said that. So I haven't been able to trace the quote back to Josh Levy himself. If anybody has that, he said words to the effect of, I won't let her go to trial. But again, I can't see it quoted directly in any outlet. If anybody has that, forward that to me at Barry@BostonConfidential.net. That's Barry@BostonConfidential.net. So I'm just really wondering if Josh Levy actually feels that way. Or has he done enough with the TUI information and whatever happens at the state level happens at the state level? But it's kind of strange. What happens when the same witness tells one story in state court and then is forced to tell a more true version in federal court? It's kind of a predicament, right? All right, guys, just to round out the top five witnesses from the Commonwealth who will have to lie if they do in fact testify. Jen McCabe. Good old Jen McCabe with her 2:27 a.m. Google search, How Long to Die in the Cold. Jen McCabe, who is friends with Investigator Proctor, was at the friends and family interview where all these witnesses were interviewed, I guess, by Proctor and Buchanek regarding this accident. It's been called something else by the defense. I believe they call it a conspiracy. But Jen McCabe's lie is that she never saw John enter the house. She never saw him in the house. I think this fight happened so quickly, she was actually texting John to make it look like she was trying to get a hold of him. This is from the defense, and this is all alleged. Nothing's been proven yet. Well, actually, it's been confirmed that the Google inquiry at 2:27, How Long to Die in the Cold, did occur at that time, according to the FBI. Everything else is alleged at this point. But Jen McCabe lied when she said she went home and went to bed. Her fitness tracker on her phone indicates that she was pacing around her home all night. She said she went to bed, but she also deleted her phone library, I think would later show she was in contact with at least her sister and maybe at one point Brian Albert. But again, a bit of fibbing going on. I was asleep. I went to bed. They were out drinking since, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And now it's 2 a.m. Again, what sticks to me with the Jen McCabe Google search is, you thought John went home because you told the police he went home. He never came in. So who are you asking about at 2:27 a.m.? The only person to die in the cold there, Jennifer, is John O'Keefe. And it's just a coincidence at 2:27 a.m. you need to have that information in your hand, right? Just a coincidence. How long to die in the cold? We've had that information for so long. I think the relevancy of it is wearing off for some people. But that's an atom bomb in this case. All right, guys, so that's five people, five Commonwealth witnesses that we know will have to lie. Among those, I guess Yuri Buchanek, his lies are probably the most difficult to prove, because how do you prove if you know somebody? You know, it's kind of difficult unless there's photographs. It could be photographs of Buchanek, his brother, and the Alberts, quite possible. But also, I believe Buchanek had stated to the district attorney's office that there was no conflict. So if he signed a court document like that, that's perjury already. So again, guys, that's five government witnesses that have already lied before the trial's even begun. So this week, the week of the 30th, was actually a pretty big week in this case, guys. On the 26th, March 26th, the defense motion to dismiss outright was ruled on by Judge Cannone and denied. On the 29th, she denied the motion to disqualify the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office from the case. And that largely stemmed from Morrissey's televised speech about how Proctor didn't know the witnesses. That's a lie. He was basically trying to shore up the witnesses because at that time they were getting harassed, at least according to the Commonwealth. I don't believe telling people to tell the truth in a rolling rally is harassment, but I guess we're going to find out pretty soon through Aidan Carney's trial. The motion to have the district attorney's office removed from the case on March 29th, I just told you that was denied, but Judge Cannone did tear Michael Morrissey, the district attorney, a new one because of that media package he put out. it goes against every ethical canon, I believe, for a prosecutor. He's basically saying that the witnesses are all telling the truth, and Michael Proctor didn't know the Alberts and the McCabes. 50% of that has been proven to be a lie so far. And I believe that's prejudiced the jury, possibly. So I believe, in any case, on a few different levels, if Karen Reed was ever to be convicted, and I don't think she will be, but if she was ever to be convicted, this would be grounds for an appeal. Simply would. It's misconduct all day long. And Canone just has no guts. She simply has no guts. And quite frankly, I think she likes the attention of this trial. But man, she has the wrong temperament to be a judge. She sighs all over the place. She's openly hostile to the defense and changes her rulings at the last minute to cut the defense down to 10 minutes to illustrate what the FBI had given you in 3,000 pages. It's just too much, so they only gave a little bit, which I think was enough. This is a farce. It's a fraud upon the court. Somebody needs to get up and say that. And I think everybody else in the system is waiting for somebody else to do it. Michael Morrissey's implicated in the federal corruption investigation. He's not going to do it. Canone has no guts. And the attorney general is just a political animal. They really don't care. She's just cashing a check. And as far as the judge goes, I think it was a good move to hold that basically an extreme government malfeasance motion. I think it was part of their strategy to withhold that because they knew Auntie Bev is not going to dismiss this case under any circumstances. So why give the prosecution all of your ammunition? I'm highly curious to see what's in that. And if this thing goes to trial, we'll eventually see it. But I don't know. Do the feds come in here and make an arrest before the trial gets started? I saw some information online by a woman who has provided better coverage than both the Herald and the Globe, Olivia Lambeau. And she theorized if there was to be an arrest in this case, it would come after a jury was impaneled, because I think at that point, double jeopardy attaches. You can only be tried once. So that's an interesting theory. Maybe they're waiting on that. Maybe the feds think they've done enough. And you would think they'd be right, because they've proved your homicide investigator to be a liar, and they proved the murder weapon to be non-existent. What more do they need to give you before you see the light? All right, guys, I think that's all I have for you. I mean, I could go on for hours about this case, but I do have one final question for Michael Proctor, as if I was the defense attorney and he was on the stand. So my question is this: if Karen Reed is guilty, why did Julie Albert want to give you a gift? Riddle me that. All right, guys, that's about it for me on this one. I'll get on to the next one for you, and I'll see you on the flip side. You dig?